Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. You might have seen the news. Living together first can spoil marriage, study finds. I'm reading down in the Fox News story, and I find out that there's a somewhat different spin on that. It's no surprise to anyone that cohabitation before marriage would decrease the marriage's chances of survival. That has been on the forefront of the research, I think, probably since cohabitation became a subject of research. The press seems to be spinning this story as, well, the problem isn't that these people cohabit before marriage, it's that they marry. Marriage causes divorce. I don't know about that. Jennifer Roback Morse joins us. You can join us as well, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Jennifer's founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored several books, Smart Sex and Love, and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
You know, I'm reading this and I see the conclusion drawn, at least in the story, if not in the research, that if these cohabiting couples had not married, then they wouldn't have had to worry about divorce.
Well, you know, of course, that's obvious. If you don't get married, you don't have to worry about divorce. But I think what's really interesting about this story, as you mentioned in your intro here, Todd, is that it's confirming what you and I have talked about on this program many times before, that cohabitation really isn't good preparation for marriage. And in fact, it's preparation for divorce in some respects. And so I thought the most interesting thing of this study was looking at the reasons that people gave for why they moved in together. Did you see that part towards the bottom of the thing?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Let's see. It says here they asked cohabiting couples why they cohabited. Why did you choose to cohabit? And it said more than 60% of participants said they wanted to spend more time together as their number one reason, followed by 19% who said it made the most sense financially, and then 14% said, I wanted to test out our relationship before marriage. Now, you know, you and I have talked many times about take her for a test drive, you know? So we got 14% giving their number one reason as I wanted to test the relationship. And those people, this researcher says, those who listed testing as the primary move-in reason were more likely than others to score high on measures of negative communication. That is, their partners were more likely to say things like, my partner criticizes or belittles my opinions, feelings, or desires. So I thought that was a very interesting thing, that the people who say that they're testing out the relationship, they kind of already know that there's a problem. And I think that's the bottom line of this study, don't you, Todd? You know, if the reason you're moving in is you want to check it out, you probably already know that you shouldn't be moving in with the person. You probably already have some information that will tell you this is not a good idea.
The one that struck me, even though I had strong suspicions about this, but it is still shocking to see it in just black and white numbers, 70% of U.S. couples are cohabiting these days before marriage. I mean, it's an estimate, but it's still, I think, probably a realistic estimate. That is downright amazing. I mean, take us back, if you will, 30, 40 years. Where would those numbers have stood in those days?
Oh, you know, 30 or 40 years is when the trend was just getting started, okay? You know, that's when people were starting to cohabit, where the stigma was loosening on it. And, you know, those were our days. Those were our heydays, you know, Todd, when we were all going through college and all that. We thought it was all going to be a great thing, you know? But prior to that, it would have been probably down around 10% or something, you know, of people cohabiting. So, yes, it's been a substantial change. This is probably the biggest change in sexual behavior is the widespread acceptance of cohabitation, and that may be as significant as the divorce rate itself, because these numbers are implicated in divorce. These things are sort of leading into the divorce, which I think is what's really interesting about this story.
I mean, that tells me that cohabitation is the norm, and that engagement or whatever you do before marriage minus cohabitation is now the exception.
Yeah, but you know, this particular study, she interviewed 1,000 married men and women, okay, and so this was looking at people who were currently married. This is kind of interesting. I guess it's a little bit slightly different number. Of those currently married, 40% of those married said they did not live together before marriage. I was surprised that number was that high. But see, the 70% we're talking about here, 70% of U.S. couples that are cohabiting before marriage, not all of them eventually get married. So of those who are actually married, a full 40% did not live together, and 16% moved in together only after getting engaged, and 43% moved in together before getting engaged. And those were the people who were particularly likely to have lower quality marriages. So I think that's quite striking. In other words, the 43% of married couples who moved in together prior to getting engaged, those were the ones with the poorest relationship quality. And so I think that's something that the pastors who listen to your program should take to heart, because that's something they can use in their counseling with people, in their talking with actual engaged couples who present themselves to them for marriage preparation, or in just talking to young people in general, to just explain to them that this is number one example of dumb sex. You know, I have a whole book on the topic of smart sex, which presupposes something called dumb sex, right? And cohabiting before marriage, number one example of dumb sex, no doubt about it.
Talk briefly, if you would, about the other end of this, which the research doesn't address, but of course it is part of the formula, and that is how easy it is to divorce nowadays.
Well, that's true. That's interesting that you bring that up. I was just writing another article on that subject. Seems like I talk about divorce all the time these days, Todd. I should be talking about marriage. But anyway, yeah, the fact that it's easy to get divorced colors how you view the whole relationship. I mean, I think when people change the law of divorce, they have the idea that, oh, all we're doing is making it easier for people to get divorced who would have gotten divorced in any case. That's, I think, what their thought was. Like, so, okay, let's make it a lower cost thing to do. But they didn't realize that by changing your behavior at the end, you're going to change the way people think about it all the way along. So you're thinking to yourself, you know, today may be the day that he decides that he doesn't like the way my breath smells, and so he's going to move out. Or today may be the day that she decides that she doesn't really want a husband, that all she really wants is a check from me. And today may be the day that she throws me out. So that risk of divorce that's in the background colors people's behavior all the way through the relationship, and in a whole variety of ways that I think are mostly destructive.
So are we stuck with kind of the cultural shift, which cannot be reversed? And that is, as I said before, cohabitation as a norm, divorce as prevalent, and marriage as being viewed largely as optional, and perhaps just if you want an extra bell and whistle on your relationship, but be cautious about doing it because it might lead to divorce. Is that where we're at now?
Yeah. Well, you know, yes, that's where we are, but I refuse to concede defeat on something like this and say that this is a permanent state of affairs. And the reason I refuse to give up on it, Todd, is because this set of cultural norms has not made people happy. And I'm not prepared to sit here as a person in her 50s and accept that that's what the younger generation must live with and just let it go and say, oh, well, this is the best that we have to offer to our sons and daughters as they're getting married, and therefore to our grandchildren as they're being born into these households that are necessarily less stable. I'm not prepared to give up because it hasn't made people happy. It has no chance of making people happy. And so I'm committed as part of the Ruth Institute. That's why I founded the Ruth Institute, is to do something about these very kinds of trends, Todd. I can't bring myself to believe that that this is a permanent state of affairs and that this is the best we can do for the next generation.
What would be a good first step with about a minute to try and, I mean, policy-wise, whatever it may be, to try and reverse the trend?
Well, first of all, people should go to ruthinstitute.org and sign up for our weekly newsletter, and then you can hear more than a minute's worth of stuff about what we can be doing. But briefly, what we should be doing is changing the divorce laws, the custody laws, and the property settlement laws to create incentives to remain married rather than create incentives to divorce. That's number one. Number two, we should be educating the public, and particularly the young, that uninhibited sexual activity prior to marriage does not prepare them for marriage, but in fact prepares them for divorce. And so if they want to get married and stay married, what they need to do is to be thinking in terms of permanence in relationship, and therefore thinking in terms of less sexual activity, of postponing sex for marriage, and really taking marriage seriously as a life goal. And so that's what we're committed to at the Ruth Institute, is to helping young people to see that marriage is a worthwhile goal, that they can achieve it, and we're here to help them do so.
Folks, you can stay informed on issues social, moral, and cultural. Go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click the link to the website for the Ruth Institute. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored several books, Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Thank you, Jennifer.
You're very welcome, Todd.
Well, we currently have 987 fans on our Facebook fan page. Help us get to 1,000 before the end of today's program. You got about 25 minutes to do it. Just go to Facebook.com, type Issues Etc., Issues ETC in the search engine and become a fan of Issues Etc. on Facebook, Facebook.com. When we come back, we're going to be reviewing a sermon preached by Pastor Will Wheaton, a regular guest. He preached on this Sunday on, for lack of a better word, evangelism. And we'll see what he has to say. You can join us as well for that review, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-IE. We're coming to you live Wednesday afternoon. It's July the 15th. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss Ruth, Old Testament saint, with Dr. Nathan Jastrom. We'll also talk with Greg Kokel about responding to reports of the alleged missing link in human evolution. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc.
Are you uncomfortable with making an online credit card donation? Well, here's an option for you. Call me at 618-223-8382, and I'll personally take your credit card donation and process it for you. Hi, this is Craig Feitinger of Lutheran Public Radio. Call me today, 618-223-8382, and make a secure credit card donation to help support Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while relentlessly focusing on the gospel. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, or Bible in an Hour by Pastor Wade Butler. And be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
No consultants necessary. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A real life choice.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
When Amy and her boyfriend found out she was pregnant, they decided right away to give their baby life and soon found loving, adoptive parents for her. Amy is now in college and has used her experience with open adoption, where the birth parents remain in contact with the baby, as president of a pro-life group on campus called Real Choices. Says Amy, "I believe that abortion hurts women and that women deserve better than abortion. If mothers were given practical alternatives to abortion and a strong support system, it would be incredibly beneficial to both mother and child."
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org. That's sba-list.org.